It is indeed the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program. And you are indeed listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give me 2 eggs. So, tomorrow I got nothing.
We believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
Sundown makes me shake and shiver. I'm cold until the dawn. The sun will dry away the chill, and I can bask in the warmth of the day. I am the nation's homeless. The ones you don't seem to see. I sleep in the alleys and woods, hidden away from the harassment that comes from fear and misunderstanding. And I walk up and down, speaking aloud, to make you think I'm crazy so you won't bother me. Or I move in the shadows and dwell in my silence. There are many of us all around, and it can happen so suddenly, striking like a disease in the prime of your life, or moving in slowly with age, weakening your grasp on all you hold dear, until there is nothing to warm you. And all that's familiar is gone. Pray for me and for yourself that it doesn't happen to you. Treat me as though you might walk in my shoes.
God bless you, man.
God bless you.
I'll give you a hug.
Such a good place.
And that one I wrote in 1978.
We love you and anybody. Deborah Carey, the lion for the houseless in Southern Homeboat, bleeds in anybody was an angel sent among us in October 2013. And I couldn't agree more. Guillermo Mash here, welcoming you to the June 17 edition of the Without a Roof radio program here on KZFR 90.1 FM, your people-powered radio station. You can support the Zephyr and programs such as Without a Roof right now by heading to kzfr.org and clicking on Tip This Show. We sure appreciate it. Yes, yes, yes. Appreciation in the form of gratitude is our show theme today. And to that, I sing my friend Bill Such, former executive director of the Jesus Center, who lives and champions hospitality in the name of Jesus as he celebrates his 72nd trip around the sun today. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Bill. Happy birthday to you and many more. Alrighty. Today's program is a humanistic look at two Chico programs for the unsheltered that are winding down. The Meal Outreach Program and Project Room Key. Up first is Meal Outreach, which to me is more accurately monikered as Neighborly, Houseless, Encampment Outreach here on People Power Radio. I'm here at Annie's Glen with a friend of mine, Richard Munzer, and he's here to tell us how important this outreach program and food program has been to his daily life, weekly life. Welcome to KZFR, Richard Munzer.
Thank you for having me. How important is it? Very important. And it's been a really good service. You know, mm-hmm. Want to say thank you to everybody that has been volunteering and helping. Well, what it basically does is it allows us to just plant it in place and stabilize.
Richard, I'm Kelly. I was with you with Blackbird with my family. We were sorting all the tents. Is this one of the tents?
This is one of the tents.
A family had a bunch of tents, but they were all mismatched, and the poles were all sorted disordered. And so we had a day, and Richard was there and came and helped us, and we took all the tents out, took all the flies out, took all the poles out, and we found which ones matched together. We repaired some, and then we're able to give them back out to the community, and you got one that's so great.
Really a blessing. We had a big rainstorm here the other night. It was great. Mm-hmm. I had to put a tarp over. The rain fly leaks a little bit. It's great.
Yeah.
You know, it has been a blessing. You know, it allows me to put everything inside where it's not getting stolen. I don't have to worry about it. I can zip it up. We've got a pretty good neighborhood watch program going on here between some of the other people that are here. So we're keeping an eye on everybody's stuff. So it's working out real well. I'd like to see this actually, us get a campground so we could do this a lot, you know.
You know, I've been in Chico now 8 years, and a lot of times Annie's Glen, you know, can have some areas that are, like, been trashed and stuff. Actually, me walking around by the creek and kind of, you know, checking things out, I find that Annie's Glen is in the best shape I've seen.
We do a regular garbage sweep. We have garbage bags, and I haven't put one out yet today, but I took garbage out last night. Mm-hmm. Garbage cans are there at one end and the other end, especially at the entrance and by the walk bridge. It's not that hard. Just keep it clean.
Hey, you know, for someone that's being harassed by police, or, you know, have people invading your space, you know, you're constantly being moved, it's a big step up to have a tent and know that you're safe and you're legal to be where you're at. What would you say to that?
Being able to stabilize out a little bit and get things together is a blessing. Stabilization is one of the harder things out here, and not getting it makes life a lot rougher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, constantly having to pick up, move, constantly have to worry about the rest of your stuff, you know, being stolen, or where you're going to stash it, or where you're going to hide it, or where you're going to put it. Don't have to do that here. Put it in the tent, lock it up, you know, mm-hmm. get a neighborhood watch program, you know, a little tent program going, watch program. Everybody watches everybody's back. We're good. We had a fight in here last night. That didn't last long. They mm-hmm. both got booted.
Uh-huh.
Peacefully, though. They both walked off. Yeah. There was no fight. They started to fight. But between me and another one of my fellow homeless members, it was gone.
It's far cleaner and safer in the last 3 months than it's been in the whole 8 years I've been in Chico.
It has been. It really has been, you know. And that is just because we're coming together a little bit and watching each other's back, cooperating with one another instead of trying to fight one another on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's been pretty good so far.
I'm here with Matthew, a friend of Kelly's, and she brought me down here, and we've been giving out some lunches. We wanted to focus today, Matthew, on how important it is, the outreach we've been doing and the fellowship with this food program. What do you have to say around that?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's very important, and it's constructive, I think, towards getting us headed for the future mm-hmm. and maintaining some kind of stable diet along the way.
A lot of people comment that it make people feel like they're connected to the greater community at large. What words would you have around that?
The only two words I can say in regard to that are I agree. Mm-hmm. Yes, most certainly. I just want to say thank you and bless the people that are involved in this outreach program to assist those of us who are a little down on our luck right now, whether it be through the fires in the past or whether it just be through some bad luck over lost income and such like that. We really appreciate it and bless all of you.
What's your story real fast? How did you end up out here in a tent in Annie's Glen?
I lost my job of 6 months that I've been doing after I transitioned. Uh-huh. And so I was able to get work again, and then that work dried up. And so I'm back in transition now, and hopefully I should be moving forward shortly.
Nice.
Have you gotten a new job?
I'm looking now. I was a victim of robbery, so at the other place I was staying, so I lost my cell phone, that was my Obama phone. You only get one every 6 months, so it makes it kind of difficult, but
right.
I'm going to find my way through this. Alumni too, by the way.
What's your alumni?
Sure, I graduated Paradise High, and I started out my junior college level at Butte. And then I moved on to Chico State, and I received my master's degree.
What was your master's in, Matthew?
English and theater arts. You have to have a double major to teach high school in the state of California back then in 92. So here I am.
Last one, so I know you're an English major. Give us one word to describe the food program we've been doing out here, the outreach.
Superb.
Superb. Thank you, Matthew. And it was superb talking with you. Wow, I'm here with John Howlett and Michelle.
You're either talking into a Furby or that's a microphone.
Yeah. You know, John's been instrumental in the burrito in. And we were just out here, John, talking about how important it is to outreach with folks living in here in Annie's Glen and all the help we've been able to give them. What would you add to that?
Well, a couple things. One, I'm glad that they have if you have to be homeless, this is a good place to be. It's close to resources. I'm concerned that people are within 50 feet of the creek, and I don't think the city's going to want to put up with it for very much longer.
Uh-huh.
And I think that worries me a little bit. So we need a campground. We need a place that's safe. We need a place that's run by the people that are living there and that they can get back on their feet.
You know, what we've been noticing and verifying with some of the folks living here, John, is for my 8 years here, the fact that you've got an established community that's living here and we're doing garbage service and we've actually put out trash bags. Annie's Glen looks cleaner to me than it usually does.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's definitely a community here. Absolutely. Yeah, and they do take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to assist in that. We've been doing over off Humboldt Road, Rich and I.
Uh-huh.
And it's been great. I've met some wonderful new people, heard a lot about their stories, and it just gives us other ways to figure out how to help.
Did you have any words?
Well, I think John captured it. I think the main thing is we do need to do something with our homeless and in cooperation with them to support them. And long term is the key, not these short term measures. I'm glad that people are allowed to be doing what they're doing right now to be in safe housing as they can be, but there needs to be a long-term solution.
Yeah, there does, and you need to put the people that are outdoors first and foremost, because there's been a lot of bantering about on where we could do these campgrounds, and they want to put them as far away from anyone else as possible, which is ridiculous.
Out
of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
Not only that, but it's not, you know, oh yeah, we're all going to have to hoof, you know, 3 miles outside of town, you know, North Chico, you know, just so we can live somewhere. Some of these places, like even Lost Park, to me, Lost Park is almost perfect because you're back from the creek and it's out of sight. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I think Lost Park would be a good location. I think the city has lots of locations. I still hold out for the fairgrounds also in terms of having it be very affordable. All the resources are there. They've done it before. I'm a little baffled as to why that's a closed door. Mm-hmm. And it would be the quickest transition to getting people into a safe situation.
The thing that really hurts my heart, John, to kind of wrap up is everyone likes to talk connecting to services. Let's get them into housing. Let's do this and that. There's not enough services in housing wise for maybe 5% of the population, and physical and mental health services, maybe 20%.
Right.
And we gloss that over.
Well, we're in triage mode. We're still
triage.
In triage
we're
mode.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a good word.
Yeah. And it's been triage mode, you know, after the campfire and now with the COVID lockdown and with the economy is the last nail kind of in the coffin. So, I mean, we want to make sure that we get out of triage mode as quickly as possible, but we want to take as many people with us as possible too, that truly do want to get back on their feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Without a Roof radio program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Mount Shasta Spring Water Company, serving the community for over 2 decades with natural spring water bottled at the base of Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta Spring Water is available for home and office delivery at 1-800-922-6227. Also made possible by the Art Store in Chico, putting a green philosophy towards a worthy cause. The Art Store offers gently used clothing, furniture, antiques, and collectibles. Shopping at an art store and donating gently used items helps art provide support for local families with developmental disabilities. The art store is located at 2020, the year 2020, Park Avenue in Chico. More info at thearkstore.org. Gonna hit you up right here and now with some reflections on what neighborly, houseless, encampment outreach volunteers learn from their experiences. I personally learned that my strong assumptions built over 8 years of outreach, journalism, and advocacy for those without a roof were spot on. Decriminalization of living in public space coupled with non-judgmental assistance by meeting people where they are at makes our community cleaner and safer for all. I also learned that mutual aid brings out the best in all of us, from those making burritos and sack lunches to the volunteers volunteering food and money, and to the approximately 75 individuals who neighbored with the unsheltered, bringing comfort to the afflicted. I also learned that Chico must not return to the status quo police state response to houselessness that violates people's rights as defined in Martin versus Boise and criminalizes people based solely on their economic status. No further ado, here on People Power Radio.
My name's Sawyer LaMontagne. I have been volunteering with this Meals Outreach program for about a month and a half now. And I first started through an email, me trying to volunteer with the local needle distribution program. And I got an email from their coordinator, I believe, about this. And it was sent to Google Doc. And came out, picked up some meals from Chapman Elementary here and dropped them off. And ever since that day, I've kind of been hooked. Through this program, through this distribution, I've come to not only realize those around me, the houseless, that I've, you know, definitely have held stigma against because, you know, I was just raised like that. I have learned to really dismantle those stereotypes I have held and notice that these are just normal people who have either fell on hard times or this is, some people just choose to live like that. And I've learned to respect that. And it's the stigma, especially around here against them, has really led for a lot of these people to have such hard lives. And it's really sad to see some people walk around with torn up shirts and they're like, I just need some clothing, or people that are struggling to find meals. Or I've met numerous people who are camping out here without a tent, and it's like 80 plus degrees, 90, 100 degrees, or it's pouring rain and they're stuck out here. One guy specifically, which I met, was one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. And he was camped underneath a tree out here by a creek and was just looking for a place to stay dry. He woke up covered in water. The only thing he got from a local shelter was a blanket, and that didn't do anything. It's a blanket. It's not going to do anything in the rain. I really learned a lot about what basic human needs are and what privilege I have and how I need to use my privilege to help others that don't have the same as I do. I'm a social work major. I've been looking for a population I really want to focus on, and I'm 100% sure I found it.
Okay, Aaron, what do you have? Aaron O'Neill?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed giving out food to people over the last couple months. For me, it's more than just giving food. I mean, obviously, food is very important to people that don't have it, but also building relationship with people that I wouldn't normally get a chance to build a relationship with has been good. Really earning their trust and hearing their story and getting involved with their lives really means a lot to them, with no judgment. And, you know, I usually take a couple extra minutes to ask if there's anything else that they need. And I usually hear very modest requests for things like shoes or a tent or a sleeping mat, something that could make their life just a little bit better. Maybe it was stolen from the night before, maybe they never had it. Very simple requests that I was able to come back to the headquarters here and ask to see if there's any money for. I just love providing as much as possible to make their lives easier. And you know, a lot of people are scared to give money to the homeless because they're fearful of what they might use for it. A lot of people have this fear that, oh, they're going to use it for drugs and alcohol. And, you know, maybe in some cases that's true, but for the most part, people have basic needs. And I just love being able to provide for those basic needs and get involved in their lives and help out, especially during this challenging pandemic. And I learned to be a friend. I learned to see the homeless people as they are, not as other people make them out to be. Dispelled a lot of myths. And yeah, just being a friend was really important to me and important to them. I feel like even though sometimes funding for this type of thing is hard, like, it's really important. And I really hope that more people continue to give, because the needs will continue. And like Alex said, you know, they need help with stuff like applying for IDs and unemployment and Medi-Cal. lot of them don't have access to the internet, and if they do, they don't even know what to do. They don't know who to talk to. They just need some people to come alongside them and work with them to get some of their basic needs met. You know, we've come across people with injuries. We've called the ambulance for people. We've brought them extra things that they need, whether it's a tent or a tire for their bike. You know, these are things that affect their lives in a huge way, and usually it only costs less than $20 for something that they're asking for. So these are really minimal things that are necessary, things that for most people are nothing financially. But I think that if most people were to come with us and go out with us and get to know the people that we've gotten to know and break those stereotypes that are in their minds, they would see that they're just humans like you and I that are struggling for the basic things. So I just hope that anybody who's listening to this will continue to give to help support this outreach effort, because the needs are not going away anytime soon, even if the pandemic gets better. So I learned a lot, and that's about all I have to say about that.
We're here with a friend of ours that Erin O'Neill and I have known for here the last 2-3 months. We were able to get her a mattress. She had some issues with her back, and she doesn't want to use her name, but she's got some powerful words around how important it's been to have folks like me and others coming out here helping you out and giving you some food. Welcome to KZFR.
Hi.
Well, could you tell our listeners about the program we've been doing here for the last 3 months?
Well, the program's been highly helpful. They've been feeding us every day and helping with the things, our necessary needs and everything. Been trying to keep clean and just make our... we've been trying to take care of our mess and pick up after ourselves, and hopefully we can see much more success from the help we get, and maybe other people can see us differently instead of just homeless and drug addicts.
Yeah, exactly. I see it differently. I think some of these areas in the lower park and over here, you know, in Lost Park are actually cleaner than I've seen it and healthier than I've seen it. Do you feel like it's cleaner and safer the last 3 months than the 3 months prior with the situation and the programs we have?
Actually, it has been, honestly. I've gotten compliments from the normal cleanup crew. They said they haven't seen this area clean in since years, even before the homeless was here. It was a mess. Since we moved in, I started cleaning up because I started seeing drug bags and needles. And then we all came as a group and started cleaning up and trying to keep our area clean. If they couldn't do it, we asked them nicely to leave, at least clean and pick up the 8-foot radius around the tent, and when you walk, pick it up. So we're trying to help by doing that, while you guys help us with the things we need and the care we could use. It's kind of hard to take a shower though.
Yeah. Yeah.
No shower, no laundry, it's been difficult, but I think there's less violence than it used to be. More people, homeless people, are happy they actually get to stay in one spot in one location. And so a lot of people really don't want that to go. That's why they're working and trying to not have drama, conflict, and pick up their mess and try to not have drugs showing. And
well, you have been able to stay in place for a while and have a sense of home and responsibility for your area. So when that is lifted and you have to move from this area and be back in a more mobile life, you know, what would that look like for you?
It would be really hard, because then we won't have a steady spot just to be in one location. We have to keep on moving. It'll cause more conflicts, depression, violence will start to occur, in my opinion. It's just going to be the same but a little worse. Everyone's going to lose their stuff, and that's going to be heartbreaking because this is like home for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of people are trying to keep it straightforward and clean. A lot of people don't understand. People come here, harass us still, even though we keep things clean. I mean, I look clean for a homeless person. Mm-hmm. But most of these people is consider its little tent a home. Mm-hmm. And they should continue at least camping for the homeless. If we keep it clean and we try to do less violence and more, you know, respect and everything, I feel like they should work with us. But you know how things been lately. I mean, shelters been booked even before this virus mm-hmm. happened. Not a lot of help. They say they help. They don't really help. Been there for a while. Didn't help. The most I can say is I'm so used to living on the streets and in one spot for so long. Changing positions is breaking, like heartbreaking, because you got to re-up on new clothes, this and this, more stealing, mm-hmm. more reply, more, you know. And then you have people who help, but not as much, because there would be a lot more stress and drama. So a lot of people feel dangerous to, you know, help the homeless. So in my opinion, it would be really hard and challenging for most of these individuals due to the mental and the physical and the mindset on drugs.
So you say there's been general, I call in a general public, you're saying that you've had folks come by and harass you just because you're here?
Abnormal humans go around taking photos and videos without our permission. They do yell, somebody across the street, I don't know when was this again, but started BB guns or something. I don't know what it was, airsoft guns or whatever, across the water attacking the homeless because...
Here in this spot?
Yeah, somewhere down that location. Yeah. They've been putting on lights now. There's been people over there, you know, trying to listen and see what's going on. It's not really comfortable, but area is better than being walking around the street sleeping.
When's the last time that happened, the whole light thing?
That was shortly after the virus started. So middle of, I think, February when it started, right?
Yeah, early March.
Oh, yeah.
Early March. And the shelter in place was mid-March. So have you had any harassment since mid-March when they said shelter in place?
No, we had some drunks yelling, you know, college kids, they'd be mean like always. Other than that, no. I had a few people with BB guns shooting at me over at the plaza, over at the bus station, transit center at nighttime at 12. And one, they've been doing that a lot to the homeless. They stopped it for a while, so I don't know if they're continuing to do it. But I can say people are actually commenting and talking to us a little bit more, helping us a lot. They're actually seeing a difference, so they're willing to help and hopefully see a big change instead of just discriminating and calling us homeless trash, which we hear every day anyway. So
I'm here with Brandy in Annie's Glen, and we're going to talk a little bit about how important it is, this feeding folks that are out on the street, how important it's been to you, Brandy.
It's been very important because I know a lot of people down here, sometimes they can't go to stores or they can't get enough money to get them food. And it's very important that you guys are doing this, and it's very nice, and we do appreciate it. And it's like we have a lot of people starving and hungry in the world, and the more you guys help us out by feeding us and giving us food and everything, it just brings joys and happy to people, and it's a good feeling when you know there's other people out there that really care and are trying to help.
Yeah, I'm here with Catherine. She's going to give some insights, too, on how important it's been, this food program.
It stops my stomach from being hungry on a daily basis. I love this food program. I don't got to ride to the store. The buses are usually too much, and you can only have 1 to 2 bags, and that's not enough to feed me and my boyfriend. The food program, I can say, is generously, wonderfully delicious.
I know I recognize your face. I've given you a few burritos over the course of the last 3 months. Welcome to KZFR. Maybe your name first?
Johnny.
Johnny, nice to see you. What kind of words would you have to say around this outreach program we've been doing here for the last 3 months?
Honestly, it's kept my belly fed, which has been nice because I haven't had the time or the outreach to go get what I need to get when I need to get it. Mm-hmm. So it's been a blessing. Mm-hmm. We thank you very much.
What kind of impact has it made on your daily life? You know, how much easier is it and how less stressed are you because we're out here?
Well, I was just thinking about it about 10 minutes ago. I was kind of hungry, you know, mm-hmm. and boom, you guys show up. So it's kind of like that. My stomach starts growling, bam, you're here. So that's cool. It's been breakfast, it's been lunch, it's been dinner. It hasn't just been here either. I've been at other spots the food's come.
Yeah.
So that's been awesome. It's been a blessing.
Yeah, we've had some powerful words around that, actually. As someone that's been covering this beat and helping folks for about 8 years, it's been an amazing thing to see that, you know, folks aren't getting harassed or moved along or all these other things that happen when it's illegal to be in public space. People are much calmer. People are much happier, and people are working together in ways I've never seen. What would you add to that?
The police are not. Mm-hmm. The police have been given more of a hard time. They've been held back, but mm-hmm. they've been also kind of harassment. Mm-hmm. I lost my RV because of that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put it nowhere because it's an 84 RV. The one thing I want to think about is that I'm getting help for the first time where I've been helping out all my life. Mm-hmm. So it feels good to get the help back, mm-hmm. which is rare. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's what I'm getting. I'm getting camaraderie, folks working together. Okay, these people right here, this gentleman moved in over here, and you know, myself are picking up, there's my rake. I rake up here, we clean up.
Yeah.
Everybody's starting to do it. This place was really a mess. The water was a mess, and we're all picking up. So by you making one stone roll, it makes a lot of other stones roll, you know? Mm-hmm. So just one, you're one wheel, and there's another wheel, and it makes a nice even area to roll with. So it's been real nice.
Got one word, maybe?
Thank you.
Yeah, we can make thank that you. One word. That's thank a good one. You got another question, Kelly?
I just wanted to say especially thank you to Addison and Alex for putting in endless hours, endless unpaid extra hours. And not just that, but your care. I mean, the fact that you're like, come on and let me like fix you lunch, and this amazing lunch, just shows that this is about so much more for you both, that it's around truly connecting with our community. It's not a job for you. It's not a short-term effort for you. It's really part of your life's work to be of service, and I'm really grateful. And I work from home now, so I can help out anytime.
Thank you. I'm Alexandra Winter. I am the Meal Outreach Coordinator. And I guess what I've learned in doing this work for a few months is that it's like so important to lead with compassion and no judgment to build relationships with vulnerable communities, because they don't really have much of a support network. And a lot of people don't want to associate with the police, who are the other people doing outreach. So it's really important having middlemen that build those meaningful relationships in order to get them to resources. And something else I've learned is that a lot of people will say it's enabling, and a lot of people will have really nasty words to say about the houseless, but won't go out and do the work or even see what's going on. And I think it's really important to remember that the end goal is health, safety, and housing. And to get to that end goal, they need access to basic resources like food, water, hygiene products. And so if we can be that bridge to get people to resources, we can get them to their end goal. So I think that's really important to remember. And something else I learned is definitely like the struggles of women that are houseless and what they have to deal with that I didn't get much exposure to before or know about before. With like domestic violence, it's really common, or not having access to like menstrual products, or not having access to like the resources they need with mental health or like with children and that kind of stuff. And Chico lacks so many resources, and there's so much more money that could be going to the programs to offer these and to outreach instead of police. So yeah, I think those are a couple things that I've learned in this job. I'm very grateful to have gotten that experience to work with these people so that I can take it out and use it to teach other people and get more people out.
Kelly's got a question for Alex.
Yeah, without this program moving forward, what do you suggest that the city and community members be thinking about?
I think everyone in Chico knows that housing is an issue, and there's people on different spectrums of that. But I think if we could get community groups and networks of volunteers to go out and do that outreach and continue to advocate for that in our community, and like putting in the work outside of like sharing and educating yourself, like going in and like talking to your council members, or like voting on certain things, or writing grants for certain things to get the funding, because a lot of it is funding and not having the money to do that. And so it's our job as a community to go and build those teams and do the work so that we can get funding and the resources for that. But I think moving forward, I think it'd be really cool to still go out and have the groups of the same people who were going out to kind of help people move more towards the end goal, which is like getting them IDs, for example, or like getting them EBT, or getting them like other resources.
Kelly and I are heading down to give out the stuff. We got a broom and dustpan and a bunch of stuff. We just did a run.
Look at how cute that is.
And you've got a new outfit on. Cool. Broom, dustpan. We got some baby wipes, some toothpaste.
You have to give three of those to your friends.
Yeah. Of course I have four. I will pick the green one.
Alrighty. How grateful are you that we just kind of ran out to your favorite store and picked this stuff up?
Dude, my Dollar Tree is my favorite. I'm happy, actually. I have a big smile on my face, and I'm glad because I've been needing a broom and a dustpan, because I've been sweeping it with a broken broom and a piece of paper. I may be homeless, but I don't like my tent and my area dirty. Uh-huh. You notice it's pretty clean.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it, you guys.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Every time you guys help me, you always came through, so.
All right, there you go. Take care. Hope you enjoyed this show I've put together, as much as I've enjoyed putting it together. Next up is The Real Issue with Sue Hildebrand here in a quarter of an hour or so. And like I said at the beginning, you like what you hear, tip this show. Keeps us on the air, keeps the lights rolling, the support of listeners like you. So I just want to do a shout out to Kelly Munson. Kelly and I have gone out two or three times and done some outreach and done some storytelling around what we see out on the streets. And I think a really nice way to end this segment is to hear from my dear friend Addison Winslow, whom I've known for about six years. I met Addison through 100th Monkey. He was heavily involved in that, as I was. And I've really gotten to know Addison over the years. And he's a person that he says, you know, when the times are tough, be neighborly. He means it. And he's a man of action. You know, my role in this, as it always is without a roof, I told people over the years, kind of like on a bike ride. I come alongside folks and take a ride with them, help them find the right path, or help them help me find the right path. You know, sometime, at some point, you know, we're riding with different people. And I really enjoyed the riding alongside Addison Winslow, burritoing people. And Addison and I have done many kind of mini wrap-ups. And every single day that we've gone out, and we've gone out at least 10 times more if you count the cleanups, something memorable always happened. And we're going to end it with a wonderful interview with Julian, who was one of the first people we met and neighbored with. We actually had a burrito sitting under a bridge with Julian in mid to late March. We're going to head it on out after that with Casey Doran from Project Room Key. And as I always do, until next week, and after that, and the week after that, and forevermore, if you have a roof, be grateful.
Whenever all elderly people were told to stay home, that was sort of the first marker that like this pandemic's going to turn into a real big deal. A bunch of us in the local Democratic Socialists of America chapter were sitting behind Blackbird at these same seats, and somebody said, should we be going grocery shopping for our grandparents or something? Like he had that thought for himself. Really quickly proceeded to well, what about all the elderly people that don't have any family, don't have any church group, don't have any like support network to get them through, and like where are they going to turn? So we decided to create our own program. That was the first like mutual aid program that we started. And over time, as we were having daily meetings then to coordinate this grocery delivery and like seeing what resources we could get for people, things that were short, like toilet paper, we're trying to get to the people that don't have the opportunity to rush to the grocery store to go get it, and trying to like equalize sort of the outcome here. One of the first things we were doing like immediately off the bat was trying to get access to hand sanitizer. Like we saw, that was a real critical piece, that hand sanitizer was out. It was not getting around. There was no coordinated like dispersal of all our medical supplies, all the things that were short at the time. So people were just completely without any hand sanitizer, any like, you know, toilet paper and hand soap, and certain like bulk goods like potatoes and stuff that people like cheap things people were just unable to purchase in the store. And we were accumulating it all. We managed to score like 8 gallons of hand sanitizer through a connection that the Vice Mayor Alex Brown got us. And we got a bunch of little bottles, which are really hard to acquire. We printed out labels so it has the hazard warnings on it, and it has the little socialist quote, when times are tough, be neighborly. And we started distributing it. So me and Guillermo were going out distributing it. And at the same time, we sort of functioned as a little bit of like a cop watch, because it was a really like weird situation going on. The police were saying that they were tolerating encampments according to CDC guidelines, but then we took some pictures of police in the process of making people take down their tents. The first time we went to Windchime Park to get a hand sanitizer, we rolled up and I parked right in front of the police, turned around, took a picture of the car, so I have that picture. And then we go up to this young couple, campfire victims, that were taking down their tent because the cops just told them they had to take down their tent. And so the police have been saying that they weren't making people take down tents, but like, here they are, there's the police right there, they're leaving, and then like here's these people. And Bill snapped a really good picture of me handing a bottle of hand sanitizer. In the background is this woman's boyfriend in the tent taking the tent down because the police had told him to take the tent down. So we took audio evidence from them of what like testimony on what the police were doing. Could we explain it? It's like they shouldn't have been doing that. There's something wrong there. You should be able to keep your tent up and not worry about like packing up all your stuff and moving along during the day. So then it was like shortly after that the city council said that encampments would not be evicted, and that kind of put us in a really unique situation in Chico. All these people they had hidden encampments. They're always like trying to stay out of view. So even like Comanche Creek, which is really peripheral and has long been like a home to people with nowhere else to go, people still like hid along the sides and stuff, where people didn't walk by as much because people would call the police on them. They would go and they'd make them bust up their encampment, and they wanted to keep their stuff longer, so they would hide. And some of them were on like the slope, like into the creek, where when it rained, all of their stuff just got flooded down there. And it was the place they went because of concerns about visibility and people calling the cops and the cops coming in, busting their heads or moving them along. Once they had the opportunity to do that, we were handing out hand sanitizer and snacks and got into supporting them. Then True North Housing Alliance, the tourist shelter, had money related to Project Room Key, which Safe Space was managing most of the motels. They had this budget for outreach, and thanks to the efforts of some like our comrades like North Valley Mutual Aid and Safe Space, we were able to we were able to get all that money because they didn't have anybody else to do it. We were the only ones doing any kind of outreach besides the police, and the police just don't do a good job of it. I mean, they don't count. So they got us money for food every day. So we had just like of a sudden it just started like 7 days a week. We're picking up 80 meals. We were doing supplementary meals because we were ambitious. Like we're going to feed the entirety of Chico, like all the encampments, and almost like did for a while, like a significant portion of the population. Street every day. We've been taking food out. Well, different volunteer coordinators. We had different ones set up a sign up. We had a lot of people come in through that were Safe Space volunteers previously. And so it's sort of been this really widely collaborative effort of like people from all kinds of organizations coming through to plug in. And there's a lot of like relationships built over time. All the organizations supporting and being supported. And so we had groceries going around. So we had that food that was also going to encampments. Then we had hand sanitizer going around. We had like local produce coming in, and we had money coming in from people up in Concow. And then we have Butte County Local Food Network bringing them, sort of in exchange for them giving us money. Butte County Local Food Network's bringing food up to Concow from the local farmers who are like donating it because they're in solidarity with our efforts. And yeah, and I think we've had like more than 75 volunteers. And since we started doing creek cleanups too, as all the trash was piling up in the creeks, nobody was doing anything about that. The city proactively discontinued their volunteer program just to not have people around each other during the pandemic, and didn't have any sort of replacement for us. The trash was just piling up. It was filthy. And the Comanche Creek got really bad. And I wasn't super familiar with the area, so I didn't know that it, like, if it's normally that bad. And but that was weeks and weeks of stuff piling up, trash bags getting torn open, and nobody out there to do anything about it. And we just, with the help of chat, I mean, their trucks and hands, tools, we was taking like loads and loads of trash at first. It was insane amounts, you know. Now we just go and pick up the trash bags that people pack, basically, and it's just never in such quantities. Where then we were needing to do like 4 or 5 dump runs. We had like 3 trucks sometimes and would do multiple runs, just hauling out massive quantities of garbage. Because there's no system set up for that, and that's what I guess the takeaway is that you can't expect things to like go well at all. The city is so fixed in their mentality and the tradition of ignoring like the existence of homeless people, saying they're in violation of the law. So their encampments like don't exist. They don't exist according to like the zoning. They haven't been like approved through the planning process. They're in violation of code. They're in violation of all kinds of like building code, and it's just illegal to put up a tent and camp overnight and all these things. And so they just want to pretend like they don't exist. So even when there's this like very clear problem of like people are living out here, decided where you've been forced to, in the case of the police department, to tolerate their existence out there like they were before, but they were just moving them around whenever they felt like it or whenever they'd get calls and making like the musical chairs, you know, you get busted from one place, you go to another place, and somebody moves into your old place, and they still refuse to work with people in encampments as if they like have any right to be there, and just giving them like regular trash service, which is such an easy thing for the city to do. It's like you already send out employees, you know, just having like you already have these dump trucks, just send it in, and you can basically count on people coming out and like throwing the trash bags in the back. Just won't do it on a regular basis. The whole way, just like waiting for the time when they can bite them all out, and they're gonna do that now. We're gonna have the most massive wave of like encampment evictions Chico's ever seen, like on a scale that the city's never had to deal with before. I think it's gonna be in different waves. From some intel I picked up, that there's attempts to or there's an effort to set up sanctioned campgrounds, and they're finally going to score some land for chat probably to be managing some campgrounds there, and allowing people to set up there. But they're going to use that to clear out as many people as they can, sort of like up to that point. And they're probably going to start with Annie's Glen in downtown and try to get rid of those people as fast as they can. But all their like campgrounds are going to fill up because there's just too many people on the street, and they're not willing to put up enough resources. They're not willing to get a plot of land that's large enough. They're not willing to like prioritize it. They're not willing to put like tents on top of parking lots or anything like that. So I've talked to a lot of people. I asked them like, what would you be down with, like a sanctioned campground type scenario where there's like an on-site manager, but otherwise you're just cool staying there all the time? And they say, hell yeah. The prospect of having like stuff stay clean and having like access to services and stuff is like worth it to a lot of people.
Yeah, Julian, I know I interviewed you, at the beginning of this whole thing, maybe mid-March, end of March. But how important has it been for, you know, getting food and some fellowship on a mostly daily basis with the outreach team?
Absolutely. Both of them are vital. To be able to have meals delivered when all resources have been practically cut off is just a blessing beyond belief. And the fellowship alone, it's so important to not lose sight of what the real issue is here, and that's humanity, you know, and that those out here are suffering on a deeper scale. You know, our shelter in is outside. Mm-hmm. And so the fellowship and interaction with those who show love with their hearts by blessing us with food and just a little bit of time, it goes a long, long way.
And it's reciprocal. I had such a wonderful experience with you three months ago, you know, just kind of getting to know you a little bit better. How has things gone for you the past 3 months?
It's been difficult. Again, the lack of resources has been just astounding. Lack of water, fresh water, warm water, soap, bathrooms, access to telephone services or resources to get out of the situation are absolutely obsolete.
See, one more thing is, I was just saying this to Kelly, what irritates me to no end, Julian. A few city council meetings ago, there must have been at least two or three council members that are kind of, doing the politicking thing. Our number one issue by far is the tents in the parks, and we need to deal with that issue. They haven't spent a dime. The city hasn't spent a dime. We're walking around on people's volunteer time, state time, and money. The city hasn't spent any money. Matter of fact, the mayor, I interviewed her early on, Julie, and she's like, and we want to make sure we keep the budget, intact, so we won't be spending any money on this. I mean, how can you have the number one issue in Chico being people outdoors in tent, but you don't want to spend any money on it?
Or have I seen them spend any time getting to know any of us?
Yeah, exactly.
As well? So how can you make a judgment call when you haven't even spent a minute or a penny out here to even get an idea of what the needs are and what we could do? We all have ideas out here, that would better suit us, for those who are living out here. But I haven't seen one council member out here. Right. I haven't seen the mayor out here once to sit down and get to know, just as you guys have, get to know one of us. So, maybe they should start there with a little time, and a little education. Yeah.
What about churches? Because it's like, you get closer to God, go out and help poor people. How many church folks you seen out here?
A few. Yeah, I've seen a few, that is, whether you are part of a church or part of a spiritual understanding, being out here in nature, especially this beautiful park, I can't imagine being any closer to God.
Any final comments?
Well, I just say that if you have the means, to donate anything, whether it be time, money, or food, please do so. Gratitude goes beyond belief. We thank you.
The Without a Roof radio program. It's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by OHM Foods. With Whole Foods, organic, non-GMO, and a dairy-free menu. Open 12 noon to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Their full menu is at iloveomfoods.com. For pickup orders and limited inside dining, social distancing required. Pickup orders will be on the tables with your name on it. Please wait outside till your order is ready. OHM Foods thanks you for keeping the community safe. Details at iloveomfoods.com or give them a call, 965-5263. Also made possible by Chico News and Review. Due to the impact of the coronavirus, publication of the CNR will be suspended until the crisis is over. Chico News and Review is an independent news outlet with donations accepted at newsreview.com/Sacramento/donate. Get on out there, Google them, and check out their blog. They're doing some wonderful work online only during this crisis. All right, listeners, just joining. I'm starting an interview right now, Guillermo Mash, Without a Roof radio program, June 17th edition. And I have Casey Doran back on the line here doing a pre-record. And Casey signs folks up for the waiting list for Project Room Key via the 211 helpline. And Casey's also the board member and operations manager at Safe Space Winter Shelter. Welcome to KZFR. Casey.
Thank you for having me, Guillermo.
Yeah, I know, Casey. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And you really came across so sincere and passionate last week about just how many people are needing your services and just how dire the situation is. And I think you have some more testimonies or, some more observations from folks that are in your shelter right now, these hotel rooms that you could share with our listeners.
Well, since we started registering people in April for the waiting list, we've registered over 265 individuals, plus their spouses, partners, and children. The requirements the state mandated are people who have been exposed to the COVID-19, people over 65, or those at high risk due to underlying health conditions. The majority of those registered have serious medical issues, including COPD, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, kidney failure, hep C, bronchitis, and lung disease. There are people out on the street that I have on that list that are in wheelchairs, that have traumatic brain injuries, and some even blind. And that's just the waiting list. I'd like to tell you a little bit about some of those we've been able to get in shelter. There's one couple, Joseph and Angelina, that are 60 and 64. Between them, they have lung disease, lupus, heart disease, and they're both fighting cancer. Two of our folks that were in motels passed away while we've been doing this. But at least they died in a clean bed with people that cared around them, not in an alley or under a bridge alone. We have sheltered three pregnant women, one who has heart disease and another also dealing with cancer. They now have a better chance of giving birth to healthy babies. In fact, one is expected to give birth this morning. We had a family of six call 211 a few weeks ago as they had been exposed to the COVID virus and they were now living and sleeping in their car, afraid they would infect others. We were able to check with the county and get them in quickly. They are now in isolation. And then there's William, 56. I've known William for a few years. He has COPD and heart disease. He also has some mental issues. His mother passed away just as the coronavirus stayed in place was issued. He was unable to tell his mother goodbye or be there when she was buried. We at least were able to give him a safe place to stay and a place to mourn his loss. While we're doing this, a lot of the people that are involved in this are with Safe Space, the low barrier shelter, that emergency shelter that is only open during the winter months. I want to talk about Project Room Key, but I also want the people to realize that although we are able to shelter approximately 140 people right now, those are only the ones we have in rooms. That's not counting all these other people that are out there. And many aren't even registered because they know they haven't got a chance getting in there. When this project ends, which is the last I've heard was going to be the end of June, all of these people are going to be out there on the street again. There are so many out there that need our help. That's why Safe Space continues to work towards a year-round shelter. With a year-round shelter, we could help these folks with caseworkers, get them services that they need, medical and mental health, help them get into housing and find jobs. We really need the community to support this to happen. Please, we need you to write letters to the city council. Talk about this with your friends. Go into your churches or your community groups and see if you can't help us. We need money, of course. We need volunteers. But we really need support from the people so that this can happen. We have a website, so please check it out and read more about what we are doing. If you can, we'd love to have you volunteer with us or donate to the cause if possible.
So just for our listeners just joining, we are speaking with Casey Doran, who is working, signing folks up for Project Room Key, which is a statewide program that the governor had signed off on and given tons of money to counties throughout the state to actually house the most at-risk population of folks that are living outdoors. Casey's also a board member and an operations manager at Safe Space Winter Shelter. I think I only have one point of clarification for our listeners, Casey. The numbers that you're talking about are Chico only, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And folks that heard about how to get involved, you can find their website at safespacechico.org. What's the lay of the land as far as the guests? Are they getting kind of anxious knowing that it's probably going to end in a couple of weeks?
I'm afraid they are worried about that. I mean, we have one woman that I was so glad we extended. She's only like 26 years old, and she has congestive heart failure. She's in really bad shape. And her husband called me in a panic saying, that was at the end of May, saying, please, you know, my wife is dying. He goes, please, are we going to be able to stay here? And I go, look, just stay where you are. We don't know what's going to happen. Don't, you know, just don't panic yet. Oh, you know, now she's got at least till the end of June. I'm not sure what's going to happen after that. That's why we need something more than what we have. There just isn't enough for the people in this town. There aren't enough beds. You know, Tories is doing the best they can with what they've got. Chat's helping, getting people into housing. But it's not enough. We need a year-round shelter. These aren't people coming from other states or other counties,
no,
like people
not.
Try to say. These are our people. Many of them have been here for years, but because of medical issues or losing a job or mental health problems, they're out there on the street, and we need to do better. These are our people.
Yeah, for folks that may not know Safe Space Winter Shelter, a good description of it, but the shelter's only open during the winter. You know, like typically it's mid-December through early March or in some weeks in between. I know this year and past years too, Casey, you kind of scurry. And I think a couple of weeks they had to shut down and then they reopened. So we really do need a full year-round location for this program. And I really hope that, you know, you guys are successful in your search and that folks that are listening, once again, write letters to the editor, talk to your family, talk to folks in church. Hey, go knock on the door at your church and say, I want to speak to the pastor or the minister and kind of lay out why this is so important. And I think you've done a nice job, you know, kind of poignant job the last few weeks, Casey, kind of going, look at the dire need that we have out there. And, you know, anyway, yeah.
If it hadn't been for the churches, this never would have happened. The safe space would never have existed. The churches in our community, many of them, have stepped up and taken us in for a week, some of them even 2 weeks, and helped serve dinner. They've volunteered. If it hadn't been for them, we'd be out of luck. We'd have no place. We have no building. There's nothing we can do. If a church doesn't help us, we're out of luck, which is why we've had to make it shorter, because of the fire in Paradise. Some of those buildings, some of those churches had to open up for schools and help Paradise, which is important too. But because of that, that cut us out a few weeks too. And right. Believe me, when you're turning around looking at these people and saying, I'm sorry, this is it. We've even had them going, well, look, we promise we'll be good. We won't do this. You know, we'll sign that we'll help more. And I go, it's not like anything you've done wrong. We've just run out of churches. That's why a building is so important to us. So anybody that can help us with pushing forward with the city council, just writing letters to the newspaper saying how important this is and that you support a year-round shelter for us would be very much appreciated.
Well, you know, just to be totally upfront for our listeners, and I was involved with the program. I was there the first night that was opened in 2013 at the Peace and Justice Center. You know, it hurts my heart as a quote-unquote a red-verse Christian, Casey. Just going to throw a number out there, but I don't think there's more than 10% of the churches in Chico that are involved in actually sheltering people, and certainly no more than 15% that are maybe are providing meals as well. So we have a big opportunity for these churches that are out there, for whatever reason, one or another, have decided they don't want to participate in the program. The more churches participate, the longer the program can run. So,
oh, absolutely.
I would definitely just put a plug in for that. So particularly if you belong to a church or a congregation that doesn't do Safe Space Winter Shelter and you're listening to this program, you know, talk with your clergy, talk with the elders at your church, and, you know, see what we can do, because gosh, winter's coming fast.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's going to only be worse with this COVID-19 too, so.
All right, Casey, any closing comments?
No, I think I rattled on way too long already. I get very emotional about this, so.
Yeah, I do too. We're going to be airing a lot of the mutual aid this week too, Casey, and being out there on the front lines is like, it's, you know, you and I were on the phone yesterday. We were trying to problem solve for people that were on the wait list, or one guy that said he was approved, but he lost his phone. And there's just a sense of urgency, and just the direness of it all is can be overwhelming.
Yes, it is.
Casey, nice to talk to you. I'll see you soon.
Okay, guy. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.